My mother made me do it. And among all of the things that she made me do, it is one of the top two or three for which I am most grateful. I'm talking about attending my first meeting of the high school youth group at the Unitarian Universalist Church where I grew up. I had been a regular and frequently enthusiastic attender and participant in religious education classes at my congregation from the nursery through the ninth grade, which was when middle school ended in our system. There was no coming-of-age program for 8th to 9th graders in my congregation at that time, nor was there one for high school-age youth. There was a youth group called Liberal Religious Youth, LRY, and so my 9th grade class was the original version of the neighboring faiths curriculum that we use here, and when it was all over, I was told that we had graduated from religious education, and I was given a Life magazine published book of world religions with a congratulatory sticker inside of it that had my name on it. I think I still have it. Although nobody said it outright, I had the feeling that graduating meant that nobody could make me come anymore. I could choose whether I wanted to come. So starting high school was a stressful time for me, and when September came around, I felt like it was all too much, and the one thing I could really control was saying no to getting up on Sunday morning and going to church youth group. Now, my mother was obviously disappointed, but she didn't pull rank. She tried persuasion instead. And when that didn't work, she went to the next level. She asked me to try it once for her. Okay, I said, I'll go once for you. And this changed the whole rest of my life. That day, my mother blessed my future. She gave me an ongoing spiritual life, a career path, and a religious community that has meant everything to me. Without going to that first local youth group meeting, I never would have continued down the path of involvement and leadership that opened up the possibility that I might want to be a minister. My mother had no idea that she would bless my future by pushing me just enough to try something I didn't understand and wasn't sure I wanted to do. What she did know is that she loved me, and that when she was in the ninth grade, her own Unitarian Church youth group was a great experience for her. She didn't lay on me all of her stories about her experiences as a Unitarian youth. She was too smart for that. Instead, she just asked me to do something for her one time, and that was how she blessed me. Now, when I went to that first youth group meeting, I didn't know the older youth all that well, and the advisor to the group was somebody that I had never met. He was a young chiropractor. His name was John Koss. He was an intellectual. He was a relatively new member of the UU congregation, attracted by the philosophical and humanist community that he found there. And he knew nothing about what today we might call youth ministry, or even much, I would say, about youth. His own kids were toddlers. But he was excited about a book he had just read, and he volunteered for RE, and he thought we could start the year by talking about some ideas from that book. The book was Eric Fromm's The Art of Loving. Now, having heard just one short reading from The Art of Loving, you probably noticed this might be a bit of a heady book to throw at a bunch of high schoolers. And it was. Dr. Koss gave us short pieces of the book, and we began that first meeting by talking about love. I had never talked about love before with anyone. It was pretty rare in my reserved Icelandic family for anybody to talk about love or even say, I love you. Love was pretty much taken for granted until it was gone. I assumed love had something to do with taking care of other people, and probably I thought it had to do with sex, but that was about it. So I found the ideas that this group was starting to talk about a little bit overwhelming. So we started with the question, what is love? And a few of the brave older youth mumbled answers about being attracted to someone or getting married and about what you have to feel about them to say that you love them. But after a little bit, Dr. Koss inserted Fromm's question that comes from that reading that we just heard. What if love is not just a feeling? Feelings come and go. What if love has to have other things along with the feeling? What if love is a decision? Well, I'd never thought about that before. I kind of thought love was a magical experience that happened to you, not something that you decided to do or to express or to be. But now the group was over, and Dr. Koss said that he hoped maybe we could have some meetings in some of our own families' homes on some Sunday nights in the future instead of at the church. Would anybody consider volunteering their house? Well, I looked around, and everybody else was looking at their shoes, so I raised my hand. I raised my hand even though I had told myself an hour earlier I was only coming to one meeting. And here I am today. It's a direct line. I can't say that raising my hand was a decision to love, but it was a decision to step through a door that was open for me into a future that promised a deeper exploration of love. It was a door that my mother had walked through herself at one point, and she wanted to show me the way. It was a door that Dr. Koss was trying to open for himself, and he knew that there was something important on the other side, and it needed to be shared with young people. And I look back 50 years at these events, and I give thanks for these two people who blessed my life. Through the experiences I had in my UU youth group, I continue to meet people who became guides and door openers and personal examples for me for a longer and shorter period of time. What they had in common, whether they were consciously trying to be that kind of person in my life, was that they took me seriously as a person of worth and dignity who had gifts to offer the world, and who they wanted to help me discern what those gifts might be. Taking somebody seriously as a person of worth and dignity sounds like the simplest thing to do, but it's something that's not done often enough. Too many of us are regularly so busy judging and calculating and, even if we wouldn't think of it this way, manipulating other people to serve the needs that we have. Or we're not aware and confident enough in ourselves to make a habit of seeing the unique gifts in others and what they have to offer, not just to us, but to the world. This is the challenge that our teachers in our schools and our colleges, and that the volunteer teachers and leaders in our religious education program that we've honored today face week in and week out. So this, on Friday night, yesterday, here at the fellowship, we had an open meeting for anybody who could come on that beautiful, lovely evening last night and spend an evening inside here to talk about the future of our ministry for and with youth. We had 16 people turn out, 5 youth, 8 adults, and 3 staff members who spent 3 hours together exploring the challenges, the gaps, and the successes of our current programming for youth. And the adults included parents, current middle school and high school volunteer teachers, and former coming-of-age mentors. It was a great group, and the conversation was deep and meaningful. So why were we doing this? Well, one reason is that as a congregation, in your annual meeting in 2013, I don't know how many of you remember whether you were there or not and voted on this, the fellowship voted to approve an end, that is a 5-year goal, that was stated as youth ages 12 to 17 and young adults ages 18 to 35 will discover lasting ways to connect to the fellowship and the greater Unitarian Universalist community. Now, your interim ministers take ends that you voted seriously. We feel obligated to study them and to respond to them. So the first thing that we noticed when we arrived here last fall is that despite this end, at weekend services, there were hardly any youth and not many young adults. So when we asked why, of course, we found out that middle school class meets at only one of the Sunday services, and the human sexuality class called Our Whole Lives, or OWLS for short, as well as the biweekly youth group, both meet on Wednesday nights, and the coming of age program for high school age people was not happening because it's offered every second year. So it wasn't that youth didn't have a program, but for most fellowship members, they were invisible. We also saw that most young adult people involved here are connecting as parents through the RE program, that the campus ministry outreach to Lawrence students is on hiatus, and that there isn't a social group for young adults that might be attractive to young adults who don't have kids as well as ones who do. So we started thinking about this. For many parents, the invisibility of youth at weekend services was representative of a broader concern that they were feeling, that we were falling short of this stated end, that youth and young adults weren't finding lasting ways to connect with the fellowship. So a group of youth and parents brought this concern to Kim Hartman and to the ministers, and earlier this winter, they started to act on it. And they have taken the lead together in gathering what's going to be called the Sunday Morning Breakfast Club for peer engagement with the themes, the services, and the sermons, as well as other vehicles of exploration, and spend a couple of hours starting at 10 together here at the fellowship on Sundays. In our conversations as well, we identified a ninth grade gap where people seem to be falling through the crack in the programs we're offering. And we were looking last night at how that could be remedied by shifts in class and age groupings and maybe some flexible choices about which parts of the program youth that are especially in that gap around ninth grade might choose to participate in. You know, the conversations that we had that touched on lasting ways to connect last night were quite compelling to me. If you look at your own life experience and ask yourself why and how you have found lasting ways to connect with any person or institution or community, what would you say? What were the factors for you? We can talk about this in the congregational response, but I'm guessing that for most of you, the answer that comes first to mind is that you were able to build a positive, safe, mutually respectful and enjoyable relationship with a person or with a community or an institution that you wanted to stay connected with. And sharing the same values or religious perspectives is important for a long-term involvement with another person or with a community, and that may be what attracts you first to showing up. Some of you who may be visiting here today might have shown up because of a feeling of general alliance with the values of the fellowship. But for the long haul, meaningful personal relationships is the key. That's true for both youth and for adults of all ages. So the members, the new members that we were recognizing today, they're going to be in and out of this fellowship in 2 years if they would only come to services and didn't talk to anybody and didn't get involved in anything else here. I guarantee you. It's not that the services are bad, but the services are just one of the important doors to a deeper life of meaning and purpose that we offer here. And you have to go through more than one of those doors. And I think that that is also especially true for youth. So on Friday night, we did a small group exercise about the best things about the current offerings that we have for youth. And we brainstormed a terrific list that described the safe and inclusive spaces we create together, the youth community that our programs invite and that the youth themselves create, the importance of their connection with adult mentors, and the quality and the depth of the conversations that happen among them, along with engaging in service learning and having a good time together. Almost everything on that best things list was rooted in the quality of the relationships that are made possible among the youth group members and with involved adults. And particularly meaningful to hear were some of the adult responses about how meaningful relationships with youth had become to them. And one said, "I live for the aha moment when a new insight into yourself or some life issue arises." In that reading that Reverend Kathleen read, Eric Fromm observed that we have faith in the potentialities of others and of humankind because and only to the degree that we've experienced the reality of growth ourselves and the strength of our own power of reason and love. If that's true, then our ability to bless the future by risking cross-generational relationships outside of our family systems isn't something that depends on us having any superhuman spiritual abilities. It does depend on making a choice to prioritize those relationships in the time that you have. It means being willing to be a little vulnerable and maybe a little humble about what you think you know. But it also means being able to know and trust your own insights and experiences of wisdom and of beauty and having the courage to share them in relationships with people who are younger than yourself, or for youth, to have the courage to share your experiences and understandings with people older than yourself and trust that they will be respectfully received. We all have to make that choice in this fellowship. There's a poem I love that UU theologian Rebecca Parker wrote called Benediction that I think is probably being quoted around the country during this month a lot in the congregations that have been taking up the theme of blessing. In part, the poem says, "Your gifts, whatever you discover them to be, can be used to bless or curse the world. And you have to answer this question, what will you do with your gifts? Choose to bless the world. The choice to bless the world can take you into solitude to search for the source of power and grace, or the choice will draw you into community, the endeavor shared, the heritage passed on. The choice to bless the world is more than an act of will, a moving forward into the world with the intention to do good. It's an act of recognition, a confession of surprise, a grateful acknowledgement that in the midst of a broken world, unspeakable beauty, grace, and mystery abide. None of us alone can save this world. Together, that is another possibility waiting." Like Eric Fromm, Rebecca Parker affirms in this poem that loving the world and blessing the world and its future is an act of choosing. You make it happen. It doesn't just happen to you because you have a role or you have a person you love or a job that you do. But she also says that it goes beyond the choice. It's an act of recognition, a confession of surprise. I think that's a good way to describe the aha moments that happen over and over again in relationships that develop among youth and between youth and adults here at the fellowship. We recognize each other, and we quietly confess our surprise at how unexpectedly beautiful we all are. In all of our quirky imperfection, unspeakable grace and beauty and mystery abide. None of us can ever be sure how our lives affect others. My mother's personal generosity to people and institutions that she cares about is not something that she does intentionally to set an example for her children. It's just who she is. My first high school youth group advisor, Dr. Koss, probably does not remember much about his 5 months of volunteering to teach that class at the Unitarian Church. Because we can never be sure if our actions, our attitudes, and our choices is going to change a life or change the world, they all become equally important. So consider how you can bless the future through your involvement here. We have ongoing opportunities for you to be involved in doing that through the Fellowship's youth programs. We're looking how the successful Neighboring Faiths curriculum could appropriately lead young people towards OWLS and youth group participation. We're imagining new possibilities for building a UU Connections and Identity program for people in that hinge of ninth grade, anywhere from 8th to 10th. And we're preparing to have a coming-of-age class for 10th to 12th graders next year. All of these programs have opportunities for adult involvement as part of year-long teaching teams, as mentors in one-to-one relationships with youth, as presenters in classes or as part of panels, as sponsors for field trips and conferences, as companions on service learning trips. Kim Hartman and I would love to hear about your interests and gifts and willingness to be involved. With the speed of change in so many aspects of our world, it is more difficult than ever to anticipate the future. The children and the grandchildren that we are now parenting will live out their last years in a world of technologies and political challenges that we cannot even begin to imagine. And so the blessing that we give to them can't be something that can intentionally and confidently address that future directly. But what we can give them is a blessing that has been tried and true for many generations and that has not been destroyed over those generations by greed or cruelty or oppression. It is the blessing of human community. The very work that we gather here week after week to affirm and to create. None of us alone can save this world, but together, that is another possibility waiting.